This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Tons of great guests. My partner's down there in Cartersville, Georgia, which is not too far away from the Atlanta Hawks, where they're up one zip in a little basketball action last night. There's a lot going on, Wes. What's happening?
Yeah, it's June, and somehow or another, we're still rolling, right? What about baseball the last two nights, Pack? Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Out in Omaha?
Oh, you mean Omaha? I thought you meant Giants.
I
thought you meant Giants sweeping in Anaheim and Dodgers getting swept. Oh, you mean Omaha?
No.
Yeah, that too, Wes.
No.
How about that game last night? Listen, I know there's a lot of Virginia fans that are still hurting after that crazy game. I get it. But Stanford last night said, hey, Virginia, hold my beer, because I could not believe what I was watching last night. That, just when you thought the Virginia gut punch the night before might have been one of the worst you've seen, Stanford took it to another level of frustration last night.
Yep.
And, you know, the good news for Virginia
sure
is they play tonight, right? The good news for the Hoos is, that stunk, the way that thing played out. But you got another day to play. That did not happen last night for Stanford, who was literally a single pitch away with the Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year on the mound. One strike away from punching their ticket, which would have been a perfecto deal for State. And Vanderbilt found a way. Again, these teams, Wes, are so good. And when you have a chance to bury somebody, you better bury them, or else you can have some serious consequences come your way.
Yeah, now it kind of leads to, after two nights of drama, what do the Cavaliers and Longhorns have for us tonight? Because you're going to get Mike Vossel against Pete Hansen at 7 o'clock tonight from Omaha on ESPN2. And this now is an elimination game. Virginia's lost to Mississippi State the other night. Texas lost earlier in the bracket to Mississippi State. And now here are the Cavaliers and Longhorns with the right to meet the Bulldogs again. Going to be interesting to kind of see how this plays out. Virginia is 6-0 this year in elimination games, Pack, as we all know. 4-0 in the regionals, 2-0 in the super regional. 1999 Rice, coached by the legendary Wayne Graham, is the only school to win seven elimination games in an NCAA tournament since the field expanded. And that was the first year the field expanded, by the way. So we'll see what happens here. I think all the things that Brian O'Connor has channeled with this particular team certainly come into play here tonight for sure.
That's a given. But getting back to last night a second, Wes, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Stanford, you got Beck, who's their ace, right? He is their ace. He's the guy NC State beat on Saturday. He is the Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year. They've got Vanderbilt down all night long. It was literally the same thing as Virginia, Mississippi State. Stanford has a gazillion chances to blow the thing open. Yeah, they don't. And Vanderbilt, because of who they are, their DNA, championship, no question, they hang around. It's 5-4. We go the ninth. Beck's coming in now for his third inning of work. And if you're an NC State fan last night, we'll get to Virginia in a second, but if you're an NC State fan, you're sitting there going, hey, let me get this straight now. If Stanford holds on and wins this game, we, NC State, don't have to deal with Beck, and Stanford's pitching arms are, they're okay. They're better known for their bats. You couldn't have scripted a better case scenario. So you mean Vanderbilt's out. We don't have to deal with Rocker, potentially Leiter again. They're gone, and we're going to see a Stanford team without their ace on Friday? And I've had 3 days rest, and lo and behold, you walk a guy, infield single, which turned into an error, runners on the corner, guy gets a base hit, ties the game, and then the best pitcher in the Pac-12 throws one that could have landed in the upper deck, and a guy just basically crawls in from third base for the game winner. It was a stunning loss. And not only is that an L, that is the last L. Stanford, you go home. Can you imagine that plane trip back to Palo Alto? The way they played, dominated really the whole game. And then, again, I give Vanderbilt all the credit, much like Mississippi State the night before, all the credit in the world for hanging around and figuring it out somehow, some way. And now if you're an NC State fan sitting there watching that last night and you're going, oh, wait a minute, We don't see Stanford, and now I got to deal with Rocker on Friday afternoon. And if we win it, man, we punch our ticket for the championship. And if we lose, we got to deal with Leiter again. That is crazy. But that's what happened last night in Omaha, in case you didn't stay up and watch it. It's crazy.
The interesting thing about this is the way the College World Series is, and you know what I mean by this, because the field has expanded, not just in the way they play it, but over the time they play it, right, with the days off and things like that. So now all of a sudden, kind of the way that works, Vanderbilt is 1-1. They come back, win the other ball game last night, don't see Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, and now look what happens. Here come Rocker and Leiter back at you. I mean, it's interesting how it works, right? Because if you can get through that one game, everybody's got one. Some are gifted enough to have two. Vanderbilt's got two at a very high level. So now all of a sudden, carousel's turned back around. We're almost a week into the thing. So tomorrow afternoon, here comes Kumar Rocker at 2:00 to face NC State. It's just an interesting way that if you've got the gift of pitching that Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt have. And that's why I understood your point yesterday about wanting to see Stanford. Stanford doesn't have the arms, and clearly it's a pitching event, as we've come to find out. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, but NC State will have to deal with that tomorrow. The Hoos tonight get a guy who – am I right? This is the number three guy at Texas who's like 12-1 on the year pack? It's crazy.
I spoke with Aaron Fitt yesterday on the radio show, and Aaron does just great work for college baseball and for D1 baseball.
Yeah, he does.
And his comment to me was, Texas, Vanderbilt's got the 1-2 combo that you got to deal with if you're, Virginia or NC State, depending on where this all was going to go. He said, but Texas is the only one in the field that's got a 1, a 2, and a 3. And Virginia tonight will see the 3. And he thought, in his opinion, this may be their most talented pitcher, Texas' most talented pitcher. So that, again, what happened in the past is over and done with. You got to look forward. But that's what made that loss so excruciating the other night if you're Virginia, right? You could have been on cruise control, not have to deal with all this nonsense. But now you got to come back off a tough loss, and you see Pete Hansen, who is nothing but filthy. And look at the numbers. 9-1, 1.79 ERA. He's just a dude. Again, this is the number two ranked team in the country in Texas. So is it an uphill battle? Yeah. Is Virginia the dog tonight? They are. But we have seen Virginia, and you just gave the stat 5 minutes ago. Virginia is 6-0 in situations like this in the tournament. They have been phenomenal in elimination games. Just when you think, it's been a nice run, they're done. Wrong. Here come the Hoos. And so they're going to have to reach down deep tonight, much like what NC State's going to do. Of course, the Wolfpack in a little better spot because they haven't lost a game yet. But this is going to be a tall task tonight for Virginia because Hansen is no joke, and Texas is fresh off of just beating up on Tennessee and starting to feel good again about life. They are the number two national seed. They are no joke. They're really talented. All these teams are. But Virginia's going to have to show us something tonight because if they knock off Texas and Hansen – They will have earned the right to see old Mississippi State again on Friday. We'll see.
Yep. Well, Texas is 12-1 this season when Hansen starts, including 7 straight wins. So all that being said, there you go. And it's going to be interesting. He leads the Big 12 in his 7th, as you saw with the 1.79 ERA, 7th in Division I baseball. 31st start tonight, career start for Mike Vassell, who is the most experienced pitcher that Brian O'Connor and Drew Dickinson have to go tonight. Vanderbilt means that's who NC State plays, of course, and Pac mentioned that a moment ago. That'll be tomorrow afternoon at 2:00 for Vanderbilt and North Carolina State. And we're guessing that's Kumar Rocker again, right?
I wouldn't guess. I'd guarantee it. I don't think there's any guessing going on here. You got two dudes that are going to the top five in the Major League Baseball draft. Leiter goes the other night. Vanderbilt finds a way to win last night without either one of those two in the round. I guarantee it you're going to see Rocker. But let's just say one other thing about NC State here. I've talked about this thing that they've gone on the road in Ruston and beat a really good team and great crowd. What they did in Arkansas, nobody has done this all year long, and they beat Kevin Copps. who just won the Dick Howser Award, which is basically the Heisman Trophy for baseball. They've beaten him. They go to Omaha. They beat Beck, the Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year that threw it in the upper deck last night for the loss. You know, they see Leiter and Vandy beat him. They have seen as good a combination of arms in this run so far as anybody in the tournament. And you know what? They've not lost. Let me emphasize that. They have seen the best pitchers in college baseball, and NC State's gone check, check, check. So while if you're a Wolfpack fan this morning, you're like, oh my God, we got to see Vandy, that stupid Whistler and all that nonsense again. Yeah, but you know what? There's nothing easy about winning a natty. I don't care what the sport is.
Yeah,
football, basketball, baseball, rowing, checkers, I don't care. There is nothing easy about winning one of these. And that's why I got some texts and emails last night from State fans that were going crazy. I'm like, hey, it's not supposed to be easy. And I think this is the hardest tournament to win. So if NC State, again, the biggest word in sports is if the Pack runs the table, you're going to look back at this and go, holy mackerel. Do you see what we just did? Not only do we dominate on the road, which State's had to do, because they didn't get the luxury of these SEC teams to play every game at home in the postseason. They've been on the road from day one, but they have beaten the best in baseball. Now look at this list right here.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, hey, Rocker's going to be out there tomorrow afternoon. He is great. You're going to see him in Major League Baseball. He is filthy good. But you know what? It's not like NC State hasn't beaten the best in the business. And that list on our screen right there, game, set, match. W. So it'll take a great effort. But, you know, where else would you rather be if you're Virginia and NC State than playing tonight and tomorrow, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Don't want to be on the plane. You know that.
Right.
You don't want to be on the plane yet.
Now, I mean, listen, you'd probably like to be hanging out with me eating barbecue watching these games. But if you're a dude now, you want to be playing. And Virginia and NC State are still alive and kicking. So the who's tonight, though, this will be a tough battle. Now, we're not going to sugarcoat this. Texas is no joke, and the dude you're going to see on the bump tonight, he can do it. Now, he's tough. But let's see what happens. Yep. This tournament's been awesome.
Yeah. By the way, Mississippi State's kind of living. Remember how close Mississippi State was to being down 1-0 to Notre Dame in the first game of the Super Regional? Start thinking about it. I mean, they're unbelievable,
down,
right?
They're down 7-3 at home. And I said it on this show. Notre Dame should have won game one in Stark Vegas. That thing would have been over. Again, woulda, coulda, and shoulda. Yeah. How many times have we seen teams not bury somebody? Like, you get a chance to bury somebody, you better do it. Because these teams, all of them, are so good and so talented that if you give them a little daylight and a chance to have another breath of air, you're asking for trouble. And we have seen unbelievable comebacks all week in Omaha. It has really been riveting television.
Yeah. Last two nights have been dramatic for sure. So we're excited to talk more about Texas and Virginia, which is tonight at 7 o'clock over on ESPN2. Good show for you today. Coming up bottom of the hour, Kayla Traynor will be here. And she is the new Syracuse women's lacrosse coach. And we're looking forward to catching up with her. Announced yesterday by Athletics Director John Wildhack. Boo Corrigan, our friend, the NC State Athletics Director, will join us at 8 a.m. Former Virginia shortstop and member of the national championship team 6 years ago, Daniel Panero, will come by about 8:15. And at 8:45, Dave Clawson will be here. And at the end of the show, Estella Perez Somarriba, the outstanding national player of the year in women's tennis from the University of Miami, will visit with us about 9:30. And in case you missed it from yesterday, our interview with Justin Fuente about 7:45 this morning as well. So we got a full Thursday for you, Pac, here on the show.
By the way, it should be noted when Estella joins us at 9:30 this morning, she will be live from Portugal. Live from Portugal. Did you not know that?
Oh, look at us. Look at us hooking up the international FaceTime.
Now, you and I can't be side by side to do a show, but we're going to have a guest from Portugal on this morning. So we got that going for us, which is kind of nice. Got to be honest with you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
What this team has showed, you know, week after week, with their ability to step up and keep fighting is impressive. So I've got complete confidence that they will be ready to play, and believe that we'll do the job. We might not win the game, but I know that they'll be ready to play, and I know that they'll compete every pitch and give it the best they can. And if we do that, we have a shot, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Agree with Coach 100% on that one. Don't know if they're going to win, but you know they'll be ready to play. And they'll put what happened to them the other night in the rearview mirror, and on you go. But this is going to be an uphill climb. This is a tough deal tonight against Texas and what they're throwing on you. But you know what, Wes? We discussed this in the first segment. When the Hoos have the old back against the wall, they have been really, really, really good. I mean, really good.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of remarkable when you think about it. We go all the way back to the regional, their first step in postseason play. You know, they get into elimination format right off the opening night when they lose to South Carolina, right, Mark? And then, bang, all of a sudden you see bottom of the screen, they got to beat Jacksonville, elimination game the next day. They do that. Beat South Carolina, then Old Dominion twice. Then they lose the first game to Dallas Baptist in the Super Regional in Columbia. What do? Come back and outscore them 9-2 over 2 days. And that's a half dozen. And now here is Texas tonight out in Omaha at 7 o'clock. I mean, it's just – it's crazy. And it comes in all shapes and sizes, by the way. I mean, the South Carolina game, Mark, was about pitching, right? And then there have been hitting stars, Ortiz and Teal and things of that nature. And then you get the pitching at the back end too. So we'll see how they go here tonight. It's going to be an interesting ride, I think.
Well, I kidded around the other day that, as you know, I'm a big San Francisco Giants fan. And it's known in the Bay Area as torture watching the Giants because nothing is easy. Everything is difficult. And that was proven again yesterday in Anaheim. But nevertheless, Virginia reminds me of the Giants a little bit. It's just like nothing is pretty. Mm-hmm. It's never easy. Like even when it was 4-0 the other night in the no-hitter, you're like, it's not supposed to be this easy. And sure enough, as it turned out, it wasn't. But Virginia just finds a way. I just love the fact that they grind. And you don't know who could beat you, right? Yeah. You just mentioned the litany there of 6-0 in the elimination games. And sometimes it's great pitching. Sometimes it's a guy in the bottom of the order. Sometimes it's a grand slam in the seventh. Whatever it is, Virginia has found ways to win these kind of games. And on the surface, said it again, I'll say it one more time. On the surface going into tonight, they will be the underdog. No question. You're taking on the number two team in the country, and they're throwing their ace on you. So on paper, you'd go, boy, it's not looking good. But in some respects, it's almost like exactly where Virginia needs to be. Oh, you guys don't believe in us. Okay, cool. Watch this. And they've been able to pull it off so far every single time in the postseason. So you know they're playing their best baseball. You know they're disappointed. And you know Brian O'Connor will have them ready to go. All right? Now, what happened the other night is over and done with. New day, it's baseball, let's go. But I can't, again, this tournament has been so fabulous with storylines, comebacks, incredible performances. I suspect, Wes, we'll get more of the same tonight in Omaha, don't you?
Yeah, I agree. And you're going to have a hero. I mean, you're going to have a hero. Virginia wins a game, you're going to get a hero, right? I mean, it's going to happen. That's what this event really kind of develops. I mean, and in Texas's case, they've had a bunch of them, Mark. You know that. I mean, what was it? Houston Street became a hero out there for a Longhorn World Series 1 year, right? I just think you're talking about teams that have a little bit of tradition, sometimes a lot. What, Texas has been out there 37 times. Is that right?
That is right.
That's just an insane number. That's an insane number. And here's Brian O'Connor, who in 18 years has done such a marvelous job building Virginia that I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the Cavaliers handle this and, quite frankly, how Texas handles it. Because you and I both know here, Texas is in a scenario where, you know, they're no different than Virginia. They may have the more marquee-type pitching or whatever the case may be. But Virginia's got that gear. Virginia's found that vibe to kind of survive this stuff. And you know, Texas got shut down on opening night in this event. It's really going to be, I think, an entertaining game tonight.
Well, the fact that there's a two beside their name means there's pressure, right? Now, listen, there's pressure on both teams.
Yep.
I'm not going to just tell you somebody's sitting there whistling in the park and the other guy is uptight. There'll be some butterflies and nerves early. But the expectation level on Texas, even before they got to Omaha, was, hey, guess what? We're the highest seeded team left. And that happened with compliments of NC State eliminating number one Arkansas. Texas rode into Omaha thinking, hey, we're the team to beat. And, of course, they lose 2-1 to Mississippi State in just another classic earlier this week. So I do think the expectation level on the Horns tonight is we're supposed to win this game. We're supposed to move on and eliminate Mississippi State. We're supposed to be in the College World Series, best of three championship series. So they've got that going on them. Virginia, in some respects, playing their best baseball of the year, will be an underdog tonight, as I mentioned. And I think they enjoy that. I think they're comfortable in that position, if you can be that way. I mean, everybody's going to be a little nervous, like I said tonight. Hey, this is a lose-or-leave-town match. This is not one of those, hey, if we lose, hey, we'll catch you tomorrow. No, there is no tomorrow if you don't play well tonight. But I don't have any doubt that Brian O'Connor, as he said in that clip, will have his team prepared. I don't think anybody doubts that one bit who's watched Virginia baseball over the years.
Nope. No, I think you're exactly right about that. So we'll see how it goes here tonight with the Cavaliers and the Longhorns. NC State now gets Vanderbilt. That's tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. The last two nights have been just kind of crazy, though.
It's more than that.
You think about it.
More than
two
nights.
It's just been crazy.
You had the Virginia crazy loss, right? Last night's crazy loss. I'll go back to the NC State Vandy game, which was an old school 1-0.
Oh, yeah.
One big hit. I mean, literally every night this week, you have had some kind of amazing comeback, drama, thrill. Who would have thunk it? Who's going to be the next guy that makes a play that you just didn't expect it? I'll say it for the 100th time. Mm-hmm. It is my favorite tournament that the NCAA puts on. You do not backdoor your way to a championship here. There is nothing easy about winning this one. I don't care how good you are. Yeah. And in fact, I had a guy yesterday from Arkansas called the show who was a big Arkansas baseball fan and said, Pack, I got to tell you, he goes, I'm rooting like crazy for NC State. He goes, to watch them come in, and the guy's a season ticket holder and everything else. He said, we beat those dudes 21-2. And he said, the fact that they came back and did what they did to us, man, nothing but props. And it was kind of cool because baseball fans, I think, are a little bit different than the football crowd that will hold a grudge for, I don't know, a lifetime. That crowd in Arkansas, man, they appreciate good baseball. I think everybody in Omaha appreciates good baseball. And if you love the sport, if you're a Major League Baseball nut, college baseball nut, whatever, you cannot turn this stuff off. Every night there's been unbelievable games. And I'll say it again.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get it one again tonight with Virginia and Texas.
Yeah. Off night last night for the ACC. Wasn't an off night for our crew out in Omaha, though. Look here, I'm going to show you this. I got this. This is all I got as a text last night, Pack. Can you see that?
Yeah, I got the same text.
Danny Graves, Kelsey Riggs, send us the menu to the Drover.
Yeah, they asked.
Message from Graves.
Card.
We need the Packer and Durham credit card, please. Yeah.
I
say
got
go
it.
Big or go home.
I got
no
the
early
credit,
Packer and Durham.
I got the credit card. It's sitting here collecting dust. It's been collecting dust since March of 2020. You know why? Because we never leave the basement. My payment on
the
Packer.
They were going uptown in July, I think.
Yeah, well, guess what? And that's not going to cost the company anything either. I'm sleeping right here in my basement. I mean, the Packer and Durham credit card has generated zero expenses since March of 2020.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Kayla's accomplishments would take me about a half hour to recite. Suffice to say, she's one of the best players in the history of women's lacrosse.
Hmm. That's a pretty good nugget to have on your resume.
That?
That's good to put on the resume, I think. Tell you what.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And that's why you get the gig. You've not only accomplished a ton as a player, you then go and help construct a national championship, and the next thing you know, you're the head coach at your alma mater, right? I mean, it's a pretty neat path for Kayla Traynor, who joins us now from Syracuse this morning, the new women's lacrosse head coach, replacing her coach, Gary Gate. Kayla, welcome to Packer and Durham on ACC Network, and congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
We were kidding around with you during the break. This has been a pretty good month and a half for you, hasn't it? I mean, you know, Boston College, national championship, you come back home, you're the head coach, and I was goofing around with you. I said, you know, good things come in three. So fill in the blank. What's number three? You announced that Charlotte North's coming with you? I mean, well, how's that work out? I mean, what are you doing there at Syracuse?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. You know, winning a national championship was something that was incredible experience and I'll never forget. And then, you know, get the call to come and interview for this job and going through that process and then getting the call that it's me and they want to hire me was just crazy and unbelievable. And I'm just enjoying the ride and I have no idea what will be the third. I hope there is a third. But yeah, it's been great, and I'm really excited.
Kayla, take it, and I'm going to ask you the same question we asked Hubert Davis when he was named the basketball coach at North Carolina and John Shire when he was named the next basketball coach at Duke. How emotional does this get with this particular job and this particular situation as opposed to had it been some other school to offer you the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a dream come true, you know? And sometimes I think about it and I'm just like, I couldn't even imagine this. And, but here I am, I woke up this morning and was like, what just happened? And, but it's awesome, mm-hmm. It's incredible, it's super emotional. I'm really proud to be here. I have an incredible amount of love and admiration for this school and this program. So super emotional, but, you know, I'm just proud and really excited to get going.
Kayla, the combination of you and Gary Gate, as far as alums, coaching and doing what you want to do at a place that you love, I'm not sure there's another combination in the country, regardless of sport, that has alums in place that would be more impressive than what you've got at Syracuse.
Yeah, this school treats their alumni well. And when you leave, you're always a part of the Syracuse family. And it's obviously really true. You know, they kept it in the family, which obviously I'm really happy about. And it's just a special place. And it's really unique. And going here, you know, was an amazing opportunity. So to have the support and have Gary still here and, you know, be an alum here, it's unique. It's certainly unique, but I like the way Syracuse did it and I'm proud to be here.
Obviously a great experience at Chestnut Hill with Acacia Walker-Weinstein and the success you guys had at BC. More we talked to the players there, they talked about the staff and what it meant to play for you guys. So what did you learn there? What is the take there from Acacia and your colleagues that you think can be implemented, if you will, at Syracuse to follow another great program? I mean, you know how successful your alma mater's been. So how do you mix and match the two, I guess?
Yeah, I have to thank Acacia. It was the opportunity of a lifetime that she gave me to be a part of her staff and be on that ride with that team. It's truly incredible. So I owe her a lot, you know, for, you know, me having this opportunity now. And she means a lot to me and she's a great friend of mine. So I love her very much. And then for the players, that's something I thanked yesterday too in the press conference was all the players that played for me, I love them, and that's what coaching is all about. And they taught me a lot. So I had an amazing experience that I'll never forget. And, you know, BC will always be really special to me. And that team and that group of players is really unique, and they were amazing. So I think I learned a lot. There's so much that I learned about myself and coaching. And, you know, now leading Syracuse, I'll be able to take my own philosophies here and lead this program. But in general, I think the biggest thing I learned was just, you know, how to be a champion and how to win and how to be competing for championships year in and year out. So hopefully I can bring that over to this program that's also had a lot of success and just focus on building upon the success they've already had.
All right, Coach, I'm going to put you in a funky spot here. You had to scout and game plan against Syracuse when you're at BC. What do you know about Syracuse?
Well, something I love is that this is quite a talented team, and they're returning a lot of their weapons. So, you know, obviously they graduated some amazing players, but there's a lot of talent back on this roster. And, you know, scouting against them, playing against them four times last year was difficult. And this is a great unit and great team offensively, defensively, and in the midfield. So I'm excited to take over and have a lot of returning talent back on the roster.
Real quick here, you've got a spot with the women's national team as well. How does that work now? What's the thinking of how you balance it out, I guess?
Yeah, that's something I'll figure out as I go. But no, I think it's great. I think it's an advantage. I still know what it's like to compete at a high level. When I'm having conversations with my players, I'm in their shoes too. I know what it's like. And, you know, I know what it's like to be talking to your coach and really listening to what they're saying. And, you know, words matter. And so I know what it's like to be still competing at a high level. The balancing piece is something that I'm actually looking forward to a lot. I'm excited to keep competing at a high level and coaching at a high level all at the same time.
Kayla, from a recruiting perspective, I mean, Syracuse has an incredible reputation. So, I mean, that takes care of itself. But even during your time at BC, did you get a sense that from a recruiting perspective with women's lacrosse, from a national standpoint, because that's the one thing that's kind of surprised me and Wes, how often we will talk to a player in the league that's not from the Northeast, that this sport has exploded around the country. So from a recruiting perspective, given the national brand that Syracuse has, what do you think you're going to find from that perspective? And do you concentrate specifically on the Northeast, or does this now become, hey, there's great players all over the place and we're going to go get them?
Yeah, in terms of recruiting, obviously there's a lot of ties in the Northeast that are, of course, really important, and we'll look to find our local players and our local talent and try to keep them home. But recruiting, we want to recruit all over the country. We want the best players in the country to come and play at Syracuse. And I think we can do it. I think, like you said, this is a national brand, and there's a lot of different pieces to recruiting, but certainly we want to recruit all over the country and make sure all the top players in the country are looking at Syracuse and want to come play here and be in Orange.
How's the conversations been with Coach Gate, Kayla? I got to imagine they've been kind of interesting, huh?
Yeah. He's amazing. He's an amazing person, and he's been an unbelievable mentor and friend to me. So he's always been a part of my life. He never left when I left Syracuse. We've always stayed close. And but yeah, we have great conversations, and it's exciting to, you know, be able to be a part of Syracuse lacrosse together. There's a lot we want to do combined, and I think we have some big ideas, and I think it should be really exciting in recruiting opportunities. But we'd like to make Syracuse lacrosse, in general, women's and men's, and combine a lot of our efforts. So it should be exciting, and I think it'll be a great recruiting opportunity and great for the student athletes to have the programs combine in a lot of ways and the coaching staffs working together very closely.
Kayla, normally every time we have a student athlete on the show, I ask them our traditional question, which is, what's the hardest class you've had when you go to fill in the blank? You are young enough that I can do this to you. 2013 to 2016. I'm going to let you go back to the memory bank because I can't do this with everybody that's a coach now. But during your time at Syracuse as a student athlete, do you remember your hardest class at Syracuse?
I don't, but I actually was in grad school at Boston College. I can say my hardest class there, but at Syracuse, I would say, maybe Earth Science.
Earth Science. Now, wait, did you?
Earth Science.
Now, Kayla, we don't know each other. Did you just pull that out of thin air? Like, I've got to come up with an answer? Or was that legitimate?
I think a little of both.
Yeah. Know you, but I'm reading you. And I'm sensing, I don't think Kayla really has an answer to this question. So we're just going to go with maybe what a girlfriend told me, that this earth science class is driving me crazy. That's what I'm thinking is happening right here.
Might be spot on there.
Okay.
Well, congratulations.
Hey, Kayla. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. Show. On a Thursday. Kayla Trainer. Good having her on the program. She seems like a wonderful person and a tremendous hire for Syracuse. And I expect big things from the Orange now. They've got their act together.
Okay.
They're rolling. John Wildhack.
Yep. They are. They're in pretty good shape, it looks like. Virginia Tech sounds like they're in pretty good shape, too. Justin Fuente joined us yesterday here on Packer and Durham, and we started like you think we'd start. Hey, Coach, you got a monster game out of the gate. What are your thoughts about Friday night against Carolina to start the season?
I'm excited that it's at home. You know, that was my biggest deal is I just think, you know, obviously North Carolina is a very capable opponent, but for us to have it at home, I think is a remarkable opportunity for our fans and our players. So I'm all for it. I enjoy playing big games out of the gate. I mean, would we all love to go scrimmage somebody and then play a game? Sure, but that's just not the world we're living in right now. So we're excited about it.
In essence, your football team got a lot of answers in a very difficult year last season. You got a lot of things done. I mean, I remember talking to you during the course of the season. You guys are getting ready to play Louisville, and you're still, you know, with injuries and quarterback play and all sorts of other things. Now you're to a point where it seems like you've got a bit of a personality going into August. There's not as much discovery needing to occur. How important you think that is? How big a factor is it to come through all that chaos a year ago and now have not just the clarity of the way you're going to do it, but who you're going to do it with, I guess?
No, that's a huge part of it. I mean, just returning experienced, good players, really to create our identity in all three phases of the game. Certainly, every year you lose guys in those three phases, but we've got a large number of guys coming back that understand what we're trying to get accomplished. I feel as good as I've ever felt about the run game in terms of what we're trying to get accomplished schematically. And we made strides on the defensive side of the ball. And certainly through the spring, that was 15 practices, uninterrupted. 15 uninterrupted practices were huge for our development, and we'll need a great fall camp. But I feel much better about just the guys returning and their hunger level and their ability to understand what we're trying to get done.
Coach, I want to go on the defense a second because last year was a weird year. We talked about COVID, the pandemic. Schedule. There was nothing that was consistent last year, not to mention new defensive coordinator and everything else. I mean, it couldn't have been a worse storm as far as just trying to piece all that stuff together. You talked about making some strides and improvements on that side, but what needs to take place in 21 to get Virginia Tech football defensively back to where we expect to see you guys just wrecking opponents left and right?
Well, I mean, a lot of things compared to last year. I mean, we didn't play defense the way we should or certainly the way we can. And there's a myriad of reasons for that. There's no reason for me to get on here and talk about it. The bottom line is it's up to us to get that fixed. And it's going to start with the run game. I mean, we've got to do a great job understanding our fits and how those how that whole thing, all 11, work together. And then also find a way to pressure the quarterback, to get him off his spot and not let him stand back there. But, you know, I mean, the recipe to playing great defense, hasn't really changed. You don't allow people to run the football, make them one-dimensional. And, that's where we've got to find ourselves this fall.
Interesting, too, because you lose a guy like Khalil Herbert, who came in and certainly gave you a lift in the run game. But you get Blackshear back. Braxton Burmeister, a lot of experience at quarterback last year, good and bad. Those are all things that he can process. Dax Holyfield on defense is as big a piece of where your success is going to be as anybody else there, Justin?
Well, I think so. I think the biggest thing for Dax is he's moving to his natural position. You know, we've had him into the boundary because Rayshard Ashby has been at the field linebacker, the Mike linebacker, for the last several years and played at a really high level. And, the advent of being able to move Dax to the true Mike linebacker and having Alan Tisdale, who's in the middle of having a really good – or had a really good spring and is in the middle of having a really good fall, who showed flashes at the boundary linebacker position last year, step up and really – at least show flashes of being able to play at a high level in that natural position, I think is going to help both of them be better players and ultimately help our defense.
Coach, I know it's cool getting potential student-athletes back on campus from a recruiting perspective because since they've been back, are folks checking you out for the first time, the renovated weight room I know you're thrilled about, and the performance center. There's a lot of cool things being built right now for football and really across the campus.
No, we've got a lot of great things going on. I've had more fun this June than I've had in a long time getting these families and these kids back on campus while simultaneously running our camps. It's been a lot of fun, and we've got a lot of stuff to show off. You know, when you have new things that have been being built during a pandemic and nobody can come see them, you're just so anxious to show them off between our new weight room or our performance center. We've got a brand new dorm opening up on campus. It's going to be available to our student athletes. It'll be as good or better than anybody in the country. We're still building stuff. We got our players lounge. It's under construction right now. They'll be ready to go by the first of the season. So it's fun to get everybody back, but it's really cool to get people back and be able to show off what you've been up to during the pandemic.
All right. Now, you know from time to time that you're our favorite on this show for a lot of reasons. Packer adores the fact, I don't say he likes it, he adores the fact that you absolutely will not tell anybody anything when it comes to a decision process like last year at quarterback.
Love it.
I mean, absolutely wishes everybody took Justin Fuente's tact when naming starters. Right, Pack? Is that fair?
Yeah, I and again, you're going to get mad at me saying this, Coach, but I enjoy and disdain isn't the right word. But I live for your press conferences because you kind of remind me of Belichick a little bit in the sense that my goal is to make sure I tell you nothing. And I really respect that. I do. And I love the fact no matter what the question is, that's why I have fun with your press conferences and do a terrible impersonation of you. But that's why I love the fact that you just give me that what's the next question? Quarterback. Yeah, you want to know my quarterback? I'll tell you. My quarterback, you'll find out Saturday. How about that? You like that? I just love the fact you tell me nothing. I live for your press conferences every football season. They're my favorite. They're my favorite.
Well, first of all, there's a lot to unpack here. I'm honored to have an impersonation. That's the first one ever, and I mean, I'm honored. I feel like we've made it now.
We have made it. We got a bond there. Justin Fuente making his debut on Packer and Durham. It took 413 shows, but we got the coach. We look forward to many more. We look forward to seeing them in Charlotte when we rock and roll for ACC kickoff here on ACC Network from start to finish, July 21, 22.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.